Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, how much should you favour your home market when you invest? UK investors have a history of being big cheerleaders for British companies and their own domestic market. How much has that helped or hurt their returns? That's the focus today. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. It makes sense to invest in what you know, which perhaps explains why many investors skew their portfolios to companies and funds from their own domestic market. That's called home bias, and it's something we here in the UK have traditionally suffered from. But is suffered the right word? Has a home bias to the UK market hurt or helped the returns of British investors? To help answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome. Let's start, if we may, with some numbers here. If you look at the breakdown of the global stock market by value, the UK only accounts for between 4 to 5% of that, but many investors here will have a weighting to the UK that is some way above that level. I guess that's what we mean by home bias, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, home bias simply means that your portfolio is weighted disproportionately towards your domestic market. And it's not just a UK phenomenon, actually. I mean, there's been plenty of sort of studies on this over the years that show that, you know, if you're an Australian, you tend to have a higher weighting towards Australian shares. Americans famously actually have a very heavy weighting towards their own domestic market, which is probably understandable when it's such a big market. But no, all across the world, people do, for various sort of psychological reasons, I guess, which maybe we'll get onto, do have a tendency to invest more heavily in their own home market.
Yeah, I think there's some of those reasons that just sort of familiarity. What I said there in the introduction, you know, people do, I guess, gain confidence, don't they, from buying assets which they can feel, and perhaps businesses that they use themselves. That perhaps explains it as well as some sort of structural reasons to do with how the investment industry works.
Yes, and that sort of familiarity and knowledge and confidence is actually a good thing. I mean, you know, you should invest in what you know, or you know, you're more likely to make better informed decisions if you are investing in things that you are at least familiar with. And so it's kind of understandable, but it's when it's taken to an extreme that it becomes a problem in unbalancing your portfolio.
Yeah, and I was trying to get an idea of exactly how big or not this issue is. It is quite difficult to get definitive numbers on this, but what you can find suggests that this home bias effect has definitely been there historically in the UK, but it has been perhaps receding over time. I found some figures that were cited in the past, and they suggested that if you go back as far as 20 years ago, the average allocation to the UK among British investors was as high as 70%, although that fell down to about 50% 10 years ago. I also saw some figures from the Investment Association. They show the sort of flows in and out of funds in different sectors, and they show that that flows into UK funds versus the rest of the world have been shrinking since 2010, and particularly since 2016, which I guess we can come to. That suggests that the home bias effect is unwinding a bit, but it's likely that we're going to be still way above that allocation there of 4 to 5% that would be, if you like, the fair weighting of the UK in the global context, right?
Yes. I mean, 50% is a pretty, even 50%, I mean, you mentioned 70% there. I mean, that's a pretty high allocation to a market which represents, you know, single digits weighting in terms of, you know, both size of the economy, but also the more importantly, the market capitalization of our domestic stock market.
Yeah, indeed. And I guess some of this reflects, well, the issues that you've sort of sketched out in your answer so far, Tom, but also perhaps the way people invest and the sort of investment industry. And I'm sort of aware that this risks getting a bit sort of insider when we talk about this stuff. But it's true to say, isn't it, that 20 years ago, the way people got or found investments, particularly investment funds, is very different from how it is now, right? Where nowadays you can go onto online platforms and search a whole universe of funds from, you know, covering all sorts of different markets. There's lots of guidance. You know, a couple of decades back, it was very different, wasn't it? People were often finding funds through advisors. There might may have been a sort of more natural bias towards the UK. And of course, it's not just about funds. There's individual company shares that people can buy. And it's simply true to say, I think, that it's a little harder to buy overseas shares, isn't it, if you're in the UK? Certainly the choice is more limited. You'll have more choice amongst UK companies if you're using, you know, a UK investment company, a UK investment platform. That tends to be how it's worked.
Yes, that's true. And I think, you know, going even further back into history, even sort of before the funds industry sort of grew in size and importance, and people were maybe a bit more reliant on investing in individual shares. I think then, you know, that you would have had a tendency to invest in the domestic stock market because they were the names that you were familiar with. And, you know, especially, you know, people looking to get an income from their shares, you know, a lot of the sort of big familiar UK stocks, the sort of the big oil companies, the big banks, etc., they were good dividend payers, and so a lot of people would feel very comfortable in investing their money in a high yielding bank or energy company, and of course, and lots of people had, you know, quite a heavy weighting to those sorts of stocks. But you're right about the international element. It is much easier now than it was to invest in overseas stock markets, and in recent years we've seen a big rise in interest in investing in, you know, some of those big technology companies, for example. You know, people sort of, you know will routinely invest in the likes of Apple and Amazon now in a way that 10 years ago they would not have considered doing so.
Yeah. Well, let's turn then, Tom, to whether this home bias has worked for or against UK investors, and perhaps also spend some time on the characteristics of the UK market, because I think that plays into this. You mentioned they're dividend paying companies, and that's true of the UK, isn't it? We often say this, it's a high yielding market, and retail investors often like that because that income can be used as an income. It can also bolster a total return if those dividends are reinvested. And those sectors where those dividends have been coming from, you know, over a time scale of 20 years, say, they've been really good sectors to be in for long periods, haven't they? Because they're defensive, so when the economy has a period of a downturn, they can protect returns. And often those sectors, as well as being defensive and big dividend payers, have actually been really attractive as well because they're high quality companies very often. So it certainly worked for long periods, hasn't it, this home bias in the UK context?
Yes, it did. I mean, the UK market has always been a high yielding market. It continues to be so. I mean, the dividend yield on the FTSE 100 is probably, you know, twice what it is on the US market, and that does reflect the sector differences between the two markets. And it's particularly the case that, you know, in recent years, the sectors which have done particularly well have tended to be low dividend paying sectors. They've been the growth sectors. We've talked in the past, haven't we, about this sort of this growth versus value differential, and growth has outperformed value very strongly, you know, over the years. And the UK tends to be a value based market. It's a more cyclical market, less of a growth market. You know, fashions change and market conditions change as well. And it may well be that the environment of recent years in which it has paid to be focused on those growth shares, those non-dividend paying shares, may well be changing at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. And so the you know, bringing this up to date a bit, you know, the sort of most recent period, the last 5 years, say, a lot of that has not been good for the UK market. As you say, tech is a big part of this story. Those companies in the US have, they're sort of doing something that no other types of companies or other regions in the world can really do. There's some comparable companies in Asia, I guess, to those tech names, but it's hard for any other market, or it has been hard for any other market to compete. But if we bring this up to right up to date, is that changing, Tom? Because you know it's part of your job to make a call on different regions as part of your work for the investment outlook, and you'll say which regions are going to do well and badly. And you're pretty positive on the UK, aren't you? Explain that decision and whether or not the home bias may be about to work in UK investors' favour.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'll do that. But actually, just before I get to that, though, I mean, I just more generally about the sort of the idea of creating a balance in your portfolio. I think it's really important to realize that if you invest very heavily in your domestic market, in this case, in the UK market, then you are kind of cutting yourself off from big swathes of the global economy. And in this case, you know, as we've discussed, technology has a very low weighting in the UK market. And, you know, and I don't think that that's advisable to really narrow your focus unduly. Now, it's fair to say that the UK is an unusually international market. So by investing in the UK market, what you're not doing is investing in the UK economy. And that's important. And that is an argument for having maybe a slightly bigger exposure to the UK than you would naturally assume, given the weighting of the UK in terms of economy and market. But it is a limitation. You wouldn't want to narrow your focus down to the extent that you just don't have access to, for example, the technology sector, which would be the case if you invested just in the UK. Now, to answer your question about, you know, is now a good time to invest in the UK? Absolutely, I think it is, and I think it is for a few reasons. The first reason is this stylistic reason. You know, we've talked about the growth and the value difference between different markets. The UK is a more cyclical market. It's got exposure to sectors which will do well as and when the economy picks up. The energy sector, the financial sector, some industrials. And I think we've seen that in recent months. You know, the UK has done pretty well, and those sectors of the UK have done pretty well. So that's the first reason. I think the second reason to be positive about the UK is the valuation question. The UK is a much cheaper market than the US, for example, and it is a little bit cheaper than many other markets, such as, you know, Europe and Asia Pacific and even Japan. The UK is pretty much the cheapest market in the world at the moment. There is a good reason for that. You know, we have been through a difficult period over the last 5 years with Brexit that has put many overseas investors off investing in the UK. It's put many UK investors off investing in the UK. And, you know, to be fair, we are still working through that process of coming out the other side of Brexit. But I think we are coming out of it. There's less uncertainty now than there was. And so I think you can make the argument that the UK is unfairly cheap at the moment. So I think a combination of, you know, sector exposure, style exposure and valuation makes the UK look pretty interesting at the moment.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, to flesh that out a bit more, at the top of the top of the index, then those very large companies, you will have the undervalued sectors there. But part of this is the domestic story here in the UK, as you say, and we're doing well, aren't we, on our sort of rollout of vaccines and our emergence from the pandemic. Does that mean then that if you want to take advantage of that, then you need to be looking not only at those big international global facing companies, but some more domestic facing names as well?
Yeah, and that's a really, really good point you make there, Ed, that it's not just about the big international sectors. There is also a strong domestic story, because clearly, you know, we have been further advanced on the rollout of vaccines. You know, the economy is beginning to open up fairly tentatively in some ways. I mean, the, you know, the travel restrictions are lifting in a fairly cautious way, but, you know, indoor hospitality is back on the agenda again. And I think as the summer rolls on and the weather improves and people get out there and start spending again, I think we will see a pretty positive environment for the UK economy as a whole. So, and the way to play that as an investor is much more at the sort of mid cap, the smaller end, the more domestically focused companies in the UK. So actually, it's a good argument for having a balance of exposures to the UK, both the big international companies, because they're in the interesting sectors in terms of global growth, but also in the mid and small caps because of the domestic exposure. Now, if you look at our Select 50 list of our preferred funds here at Fidelity, we do have a nice spread of different styles, growth and value, but also different size. You know, we have some funds focusing more on the big caps. We have some funds focusing more on the sort of mid cap area. So there's plenty to choose from.
And just finally then, Tom, I mean, someone looking at their portfolio and wondering whether they are showing too much or too little home bias right now. I mean, I guess it's difficult to put a percentage figure on the correct allocation. It may well be more than that. That 4 to 5%. I mean, that always strikes me as low when you read that. So I've certainly got a higher allocation to the UK than that without even really intending to. I think I do. But given what we've said about the UK's characteristics as a global facing market and all the rest of it, an allocation slightly higher than that may not be too much to worry about.
No, absolutely not. I mean, and I think, you know, I think if you had a sort of 10 to 15% allocation to the UK in a sort of, you know, long-term structural sense, I don't think that would be a particular problem because of the things we've talked about, the international facing nature of the market, etc. I think that would be fine. I think at the moment, given the relative attraction of the UK market compared to other international markets, I would say you could even go a little bit higher than that. But I wouldn't probably want to go much more than, say, 20% exposure to the UK. And certainly, you know, those figures you mentioned at the top of this discussion, the 70%, the 50%, that feels a lot too high. So, you know, I 10 to 20 feels about right to me.
Okay. Well, all right, Tom, that is all that we have time for now. Thanks an awful lot.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.